Several developments in the news lately have underscored the challenges, perceptual and otherwise, that Islam faces in the West. Presidential candidate Ben Carson said in a recent interview that a Muslim should not be president. Our Constitution states that there can be no religious test for public office. At a rally in New Hampshire last month, a Donald Trump supporter said, "We have a problem in this country and it's called Muslims." Then he asked, "When can we get rid of them?" Trump responded by saying, "We're going to be looking at that." For a country that prides itself on its freedoms, America seems to be struggling with freedom of religion when that religion is Islam. Joining us by phone to help us better understand Islam in America, both its perception and its reality, MSU psychiatrist Dr. Farha Abbasi. Farha, welcome back.
Thank you.
And with us in the studio, Dr. Farhan Bhatti, a physician who serves on the board at the Islamic Center of East Lansing. Farhan, welcome to Current State.
Thanks for having me.
I'd like to ask both of you briefly to comment on how Islam is faring more broadly, let's say, as a topic in the presidential primary races. I mean, we just cited a couple of notorious comments from two Republican candidates. Are these kind of comments too common, or is the larger discussion less inflammatory than these two? Dr. Bhatti?
Well, unfortunately, it's sort of en vogue right now to stereotype Muslims or characterize Muslims in a particular way, particularly in certain factions of the Republican Party. Not all Republicans, certainly, by any stretch of the imagination, but there are some particularly primary voters in the Republican Party who this kind of rhetoric appeals to. And it's unfortunate, but it's the reality of the situation. And if you look at Dr. Carson, for example, donations to his campaign skyrocketed after he made those comments. So these are very calculated political moves by shrewd politicians who are trying to get elected and who have no moral conscience, and they're willing to say whatever they need to in order to get votes and collect money.
Dr. Farha Abbasi, Ben Carson's comments that a Muslim should not be president is not in line with our Constitution, but as Farhan suggested, there are Americans who agree with him. What would you say to those Americans?
I'm just going to make a general comment, because when you say to those Americans, I feel I'm a fellow American, and whatever we talk or say has to keep the Constitution in mind, which last I checked, the 14th Amendment says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. So the Constitution is the answer and the thing to go to, but just historically we have seen that whenever religion has entered the political lexicon to further ambitious political agenda of one person, one individual, or one goal, the outcome has always been negative and bad. So my first thing is that religion is an intensely private, personal issue, and it should not be part of a political lexicon. Mm.
We're speaking with MSU psychiatrist Dr. Farha Abbasi and Dr. Farhan Bhatti from the Islamic Center of East Lansing about Islam in America. Dr. Carson walked back some of his original comments, saying he was referring to a Muslim who practiced or believed in Sharia law. Can you help us understand what Sharia law is?
Right. It's interesting. He didn't really walk back at all. He said, sure, a Muslim could run for office, or a Muslim could be a law-abiding citizen as long as they don't practice the tenets of their religion. That's basically what he was saying. So what does the word Sharia actually mean? Sharia is basically Arabic for the religion that we live by. For example, it's the religious tenets of the faith. It's the same tenets that tell me to believe in one God, to pray every day, to fast during the month of Ramadan, to give alms and to give charity to poor people who need it. Basically, the core tenets of the faith is what Sharia is. Unfortunately,
is that comparable to the Christian Ten Commandments, roughly speaking?
Absolutely.
Would you say?
Absolutely. It's like telling somebody who's Christian, sure, you can be president, or sure, you can run for elected office. You're just not allowed to believe in the Ten Commandments. Sharia has become politicized because there are those in parts of the Muslim world who have their own version, twisted version of what the religion actually says. And so they have basically attributed their political views to the faith. And as a result, our religious tenets have been hijacked by violent extremists in some cases. But Sharia at its core is just, you know, what I'm supposed to do every day as a good person. It's what guides me in my day-to-day life.
An elected U.S. president who advocates Sharia law to any extent, in 2015 at least, would seem to be politically untenable. But wouldn't Farhan Abbasi, wouldn't you agree that a vast divide exists between 21st century Western values, especially progressive values, and the values of conservative Muslims? Isn't this at the heart of a lot of this tension and misunderstanding?
As far as I'm concerned, this is a situation or issue happening in all faith-based communities. We are all trying to evolve and adapt things to the modern day, but that does not mean that if you go back to the spirit of Islam, as a practicing Muslim and as a female, I think Islam empowers me. Islam was the first feminist religion which gave the right to the woman to have an identity, to own her business, and the right to divorce. To me, there is no contradiction. But the thing which is concerning to me is, how do you describe fundamentalism? Does it mean just going and praying five times a day make me a fundamentalist? Or am I just practicing a basic tenet of my religion? That I think a lot of this is the ignorance. And wherever there is ignorance, it can breed suspicion and paranoia, as we learn in psychology, that we learn to love things, and we love things that we know about. And the same way we learn to hate things, and ignorance is the, I think we need to dispel and create more awareness. Most of the people who tend to claim and talk about Islam, I want to question them where are they getting their facts from.
Do you have many conversations like that?
Absolutely. Every day, every moment of the day. Because the tone changes, the rhetoric changes, but the question remains is, what is Islam? What does being a Muslim means?
Right.
And I can tell you, basically, if I had to simplify, it means be well and do well. Two concepts that are very integral to Islam are wellness and welfare. Wellness of self, wellness of family, wellness of your community, wellness of the society, and welfare. Do the best that you can to the others, to your neighbors, to your community, to your colleagues. And I feel the better Muslim I am, the better good American citizen I am. That's why I say I'm a practicing Muslim and a very patriotic American.
Let's bring Dr. Bhatti back into this. Whatever divide exists, Farhan Bhatti, how do we bridge that divide and improve the situation, in your opinion?
Well, it starts with education, because there are words in our faith that have been hijacked by others and that are misunderstood by my neighbors who aren't Muslim. And so it starts with education. Words like jihad and Sharia take on such a negative connotation in everyday American discourse, and it's because they're poorly understood or not understood at all. For example, the word jihad in Arabic is simply nothing other than a struggle. It doesn't have to be a military struggle. In fact, the lowest kind of jihad in Islam is when you pick up arms in self-defense. The bigger jihad, or the bigger struggle, is the struggle against one's own self, one's own ego. For example, if I'm walking down the sidewalk and somebody walks in front of me and drops a $20 bill, it is jihad in Islam for me to return them that money than to keep it for myself. So anything that you do on a day-to-day basis to struggle against yourself to be a better person, that's what jihad actually means.
But well taken, but ISIS is practicing jihad as well, and that inflames this whole situation.
So does it not? That's exactly the problem. ISIS is practicing a political ideology under the pretense of Islam. So groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda have a very specific political objective that they're trying to accomplish. And they try to justify their political objectives with the religion. But in reality, there is no religious justification for what they do. At the crux of the issue, in many of these Muslim countries, literacy rates are extremely low. So people can't go to the Quran for themselves and see what the Holy Book says, see what Scripture says. They rely on other leaders, charismatic leaders, to tell them what Scripture says. And if that charismatic leader happens to have a political ideology or political objectives that he or she is trying to accomplish, then they're going to use everything that they can, including religious justification, for their political objectives. But ISIS is a political group, not a religious group.
We have
another thing I would like to add on top of that is that if you go and look at the numbers, there are more Muslim casualties and victims of ISIS than non-Muslims.
We are out of time. I wish we had more. We will hopefully continue this conversation at some point in the near future. We've been talking with MSU psychiatrist Dr. Farha Abbasi, along with Dr. Farhan Bhatti, who serves on the board at the Islamic Center of East Lansing. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me.